Welcome back to another episode of the Mac Rumors Show. Hartley, how's it going? We have to do this, and we'll actually, for the first time in what seems like almost a year, Hartley, we actually have a guest, a very special guest. It's like almost having our first guest all over again, and we'll have to get his weather update. But for some reason, we've been doing weather updates every week, and I don't know why. What's the weather like for you? Are you off your heat wave?
A little bit now, but I don't know. I've not been in England for the past week. I've been out in Greece where there have been wildfires. That was not the best weather.
Oh, I mean, it's not sunny, but it's like perfect temperature, 70 something. But our very special guest, Michael Fisher, before I introduce and give you all of his accolades, we do need to know what the weather is like. What's the weather like out there, man?
You've chosen a nice day to ask because the morning was absolutely stunning and beautiful and sunny here in Brooklyn, New York. But we have nothing short of an apocalyptic rainstorm heading our way. So I think as the show progresses and we perhaps descend into madness, the weather outside will follow that pattern.
You're much better at these descriptions than we are. We've just been like, yeah, you know, it's pretty hot. that's about it. But for anyone who doesn't know Michael Fisher, I'm not sure how you do not know Michael Fisher, aka Mr. Mobile, also Captain Two Phones. I love that handle. It's my favorite. I will say sometimes I've often referred to myself as that when I used to carry two phones. And then I was like, I can't call myself that. That's such a cheat. Like I can just in front of friends, not online. That's not a thing. But you've been doing videos for forever. You used to be with Pocket Now. Now, and obviously you've been doing Mr. Mobile for, I want to say, how long has it been? Has it been
10 years? 10 Jeez. Years this summer.
Yeah. Dude, it feels like just yesterday you like broke off on your own and like started doing, like, isn't it crazy?
Do you know what's ironic about that? Is that, and we're not here to talk about me, but I wasn't on my own for 9 of those years. You know, I was part of Mobile Nations, and we launched Mr. Mobile as like a standalone thing. And I wasn't actually an independent, business until last year. So in some ways it feels like I've been here forever, and in others it feels like I've been here for too long. But in others I'm weirdly just getting started. So thank you for the warm welcome.
We're here to talk about you a little bit because I consider you, obviously we see each other all the time, and not only a friend, but like I consider you like my go-to for not just Android phones, but you're not like, you know, us, we get called the Apple sheep out here. So like you're the Android guy for one of your phones at least. And then, not only that, but you've been a foldable diehard since day one. So obviously we're here to talk about Apple's upcoming foldable, and I figured like who else better than you? So thank you for coming on again.
No, so excited to chat about it. I mean, and you are correct. I mean, I've been writing for this entire category since 2019. So I'm always happy to talk about it. I think that it's great in a world where, like, you know, we've all been tech nerds for a very long time. It's cool to still be able to be excited about stuff even after all that kind of overexposure. So anytime I can, get unhinged, I am happy to do it.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of Android talk, so people, please do not turn this off. I assure you it has it has a point, and it will all tie in, but we are going to start with two new recent phones, and you're going to understand why we're going with that. It's like the form factor movement now. Even though Google's been like probably pretty like, what the hell, man? We've been doing this form factor and this size forever. Samsung decided to do it, I'm guessing after they caught wind that Apple was going to be doing it. And so we have this like shorter, chunkier, you know, outer. Yep, there it is. And Google just released its new, I always get the name wrong. It's not the, is it the Pixel 11 Pro Fold or the Pro Fold 11?
Okay. You nailed it just there. Yep. 11 Pro
Fold.
I
always mix this around. I got mine, but I was out these last few days and it's just sitting in a box. So I should probably open that at some point. But I mean, they make this form factor that Apple is rumored to be coming out with. And a lot of people, after Samsung just released the Galaxy Z Fold 8 in that size, seem to really like it, myself included. Like, what are your thoughts on that? And, you know, kind of the origin behind this style, as I mentioned with Google and everything like that. Like, can give us your thoughts on that style, or do you prefer the tall and narrow?
Yeah, dude. So this is the crazy thing. Like, none of this should be happening. I feel like in many ways we're in sort of an alternate reality, but in the way that, you know, doesn't matter and is fun to talk about. The foldable world is is strange. It's been very iterative for a long time. We've ended up in this world where you've had two major categories, right? You've had the flip foldable with the sort of clamshell, like it opens into a regular phone but collapses into a clamshell, and then you've got the tall boy, you know, that is kind of a weirdly tall remote control and narrow and opens into like a square tablet. And the manufacturers have been iterating on those two form factors for about 5 or 6 years. But in 2022, I think it was, Oppo first did the squat take on it, on the Oppo Find N, it was called, N like November. And all of us were sort of, I think taken with this approach. It was sort of an in-between. It was somewhere between the flip and the fold. And Microsoft also, the Surface Duo, right around the same time, and the Surface Duo 2. And then, yes, Google sort of picked it up with the Pixel Fold. So for a flash in the pan for maybe like 2 years, many manufacturers were experimenting with this, and then they all kind of abandoned it. Google went to the Pixel 9 Pro Fold and kind of followed everybody else. Microsoft abandoned their efforts, and Oppo also went tall and narrow. So to see the squat, you know, whatever you call it, short king, wide boy, come back was a surprise to me. It wasn't a surprise as far as Samsung is concerned. I mean, I think everyone, I don't know if knows is the right word, but Samsung is going to supply the displays for the iPhone Ultra. It is widely believed. So I think, yeah, it's not an enormous leap of imagination to be like, oh, well, Samsung's display division. Yeah. It's like, hey, so
they Apple definitely ordered, talk to each other.
Yeah, 50,000 of these. And I know we're not allowed to talk to you guys, but you guys want to make one?
They definitely do. Yeah.
And there's more to explore there. But I mean, when Samsung announced this, I was like, is this going to be another Galaxy S26 Edge or a Galaxy S25 Edge where Samsung tries to preempt something like the iPhone Air? And I think by all accounts sort of falls on its face. And what has actually happened is that I think the exact opposite has taken place. I don't know about your feeds. I'd be very interested to see what response has been like from your audiences. But from mine and from the online communities I hang out in, people are just in love with the Fold 8. It's been a critical darling. People seem to be quite taken with it. And I think it bodes well for, you know, Apple's efforts to release probably what will look very much like this in about a month or so.
Hey guys, before we get back into the show, I do just want to thank this episode's sponsor, Storyblocks. If you've watched my YouTube videos for any amount of time, you've probably seen Storyblocks at work without even realizing it. Whether I need B-roll to help explain a feature, background music that fits the tone of a video, or sound effects to make edits feel more polished, it's just one of those tools that's become part of my regular workflow, and honestly, don't know that I can work without it. What I really like is that everything in the library is 100% human-made. Every video clip, music track, sound effect, template, and image is created by professional artists and filmmakers, not AI-generated, which is very refreshing in this day and age. Everything is professionally curated, pre-licensed, and ready to use, so I don't have to waste time worrying about licensing or searching through questionable assets. Plus, with unlimited downloads, I can experiment with different ideas until I find what works best, which honestly saves me a ton of time every week. So head on over to storyblocks.com/Mac to access the human-made stock media library that's essential to my workflow. For a limited time, they're offering 15% off any annual plan, and that discount is only available through our link. So again, that's storyblocks.com/Mac for 15% off annual plans. Thanks, Storyblocks, for sponsoring this episode. Hartley, in the rumor community, like in the forums area where I do not spend as much time as you probably do, what is the chat about? Like, what's the thoughts on that form factor? Are people loving it like we are?
I don't actually know that the rumor community as such, in terms of being Apple specific, has a clear position on this. I think that the enthusiasm really comes from the Android side. But what I will say is, what we can see is that if Apple is moving toward this form factor, that's a huge vote of confidence because they're only releasing one foldable. And they've taken so long to do this that they must be pretty sure that that is the right form factor. But it's just interesting that we've seen these other manufacturers kind of circulate around these different options for a while. And maybe Google had it right all along. So what do you think about that, Michael?
Yeah, my instinct is that is going how this is going to pan out. personally speaking, I don't know, did you may have just said this, I'm so sorry, but have you gone hands-on with the Fold 8, or hardly have you? Have you actually?
Yeah, I was.
Did you do the content capture and everything?
I did the New York one. Were you okay. in London for that? Because I didn't see you.
I was in London. That's why
I'm
I didn't see you.
In London.
That's yeah. why I asked. Yeah.
I wasn't cool enough for the London experience. but I do have the phone. I do really love it. And I did not go. I had some personal stuff that I had to take care of. So I didn't go to the Pixel event. But kind of curious how you feel about those two devices.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, I think I asked about that because it's important when you're talking about this stuff to know if the people you're talking to have held it. Because for me, again, I walked in skeptical. I walked in to the Samsung thing saying like, guys, I've seen these years ago. I'm not new to this form factor, the squatty one. And then I picked it up. And I mean, the minute I picked it up, I was like, oh, this is what this is supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And I think that moment was instructive for me. To answer your question, Hartley, and like in forecasting how or why Apple might be so confident that they're only gonna release this kind of the squatty version, it feels better in so many usage scenarios. It feels better in the pocket. It is slightly better for the overused example of what everybody talks about with foldables of like watching video in widescreen. Which is a conversation I will not drag you both into because I just have so many complaints about that perception. But I think Apple probably made the right call with this because of one reason overall. Are you familiar with the A4 paper kind of paradox?
That, yeah, like the size.
Yeah, like how I can't remember. I will have to look up the YouTube channel that corrupted my brain about this, and a very popular one. But like A4 paper, you fold it in half, it's a perfect 50% reduction in square footage, and you do that again, and you can do it to infinity. And I think with foldables, where you've had this sort of wild west of form factors, even more so than in the rest of Android, that's presented challenges for apps that don't want to scale properly to like a square screen at 1x1 almost, mm-hmm. and an outer screen at 18x9 or whatever it is. And the A4 paper thing is that, it's if you build your app for the cover screen, say, well, then on the inside, you can run two of those apps side by side and they won't have to change dimensions at all. They won't have to move interface elements. It's a very Apple-like elegance. And I think that contributes to why I think they went with this form factor. It seems to make sense to me from almost every standpoint there is. So when I went to the Google event and I picked up the 11 Pro Fold, I had almost the inverse reaction as we all did 2 years ago. And everybody said when Google abandoned the wide form factor and went to a conventional one, we were like, thank goodness. Oh, we all love this. Good for you. Now, thanks for not being weird. And now it's odd, like it's everything has flipped around, at least in terms of perception. I mean, all of this is anecdotal, super inside baseball tech nerd stuff.
I think with the Pixel one though, is like I might have been one of the weird ones at first when they did launch it in that size that liked it, but like when they did, they just didn't do it well enough because I didn't realize it until they switched. And then I'm like, oh, I didn't like this size, but they did a better job at this size, which makes this phone, in my opinion, better than their last take. So I guess we're okay with this. But no, I think they should have gone back, especially this year. I think they should have gone back to the trendy form factor. I don't know what you feel, Hartley. I know that you haven't had much in the Android space, but...
No, well, I'm kind of archetypal with a lot of Apple customers in this regard because... as much as I'm excited by foldables, I think they're a very interesting category and open up a lot of potential. I'm just not going to move away from my iPhone. So the pitch of this device is completely different to someone like me. And a lot of that does come down to software. And like you say, Dan, it really is the execution, which I think is maybe where a lot of manufacturers have kind of struggled. They can get the hardware down just fine. And we can argue about creases and hinges and stuff like that. But really, it's how the software utilizes the form factor. So maybe, Michael, you can give us some insight into that, because this is something that does seem to really wildly vary across these different form factors. And I don't think there's really a settled idea of how software should really play with these wacky form factors.
So you know what's interesting about that? You're 100% right about the importance of Apple. Like, I live in Brooklyn, as I mentioned. You know, there's a lot of people around me at all times. A lot of strangers see what phone I'm using in public. And because it's always a new and weird phone, I get asked about them a lot. I have been asked about foldables probably, as a result, probably once every 10 days on average for the past 6 years. And almost every one of those interactions has been from somebody who is extremely positive. They see that I'm using a Razr or a Galaxy Flip or a Fold, and they're taken with it. They ask me all kinds of questions, and I sort of become this sidewalk industry advocate for the foldable segment. And everyone is 1,000% on board with everything I'm saying. And they say, God, I love that. Of course, I would never leave my iPhone, but yeah. You know, I really wish I could have that. And So the problem with foldables in the past couple of years has not been, you know, they've largely been solved. We have water and dust resistance. We have more repair options, at least. They're still too fragile, but more repair options. The aspect ratios are not as weird anymore. The app optimization is not as big a deal as a lot of people make it out to be. We have great modalities for multitasking. We have great... Most apps do scale well. Like it's people get hung up on like a handful of them. The problem with foldables is that Apple doesn't make one.
Yeah.
And I think we've all been waiting for Apple to sort of wade in so it's to validate the category. But also the minute they do, however it's priced, I think they're going to mop up all of these people who have been building this sort of desire, sort of watching, peering over the fence at what Samsung and Motorola and Google have been doing and waiting for Apple to wade into these waters. And I think first generation products are always compromised in some way, but I don't think it's going to matter. I think the iPhone Ultra is going to sell very well. And I look forward to that because then all these Android manufacturers who've been able to sort of until recently fall into this predictable cycle of iteration that has made even foldables boring. Well, now they will have a new fire under their butts to innovate again instead of iterate.
There's a train blasting by, so I'm going to spit this question out kind of quickly. The one thing I will say is Apple took a long time. You know, they're always classic to be last in a lot of stuff, but that's usually because they polish things pretty well, and it's like, oh, they're last, but they did it right. But we're not hearing that so much with the Crease. We did it first, and that was like kind of the big reason why they weren't going to release one right away. And now the Crease seems like it's going to be almost the same as what we have with Samsung, considering that they made the display as well. Isn't that kind of a letdown?
So an interesting thing about display manufacturing is that, yes, Samsung makes the display, but what I was reminded of when covering an Oppo foldable recently is that display sandwich is not all there is to it. You can engineer around that when you're a manufacturer. You buy the foldable display from Samsung, but you can do things to the hinge. You can do things to the architecture, the foundation around it, the layers on top. So, you know, as a result, two phones can use the same display but have wildly different creases. So I think we all agree that Apple's pretty good at hardware engineering. So I expect to not be let down by the Crease. But also, this is another thing that you have to use. You have to be a foldable weirdo to know. You don't see the Crease when you're using it. When was the last time you looked at your dynamic island on the iPhone and were like, ugh? Or the notch, you know, that we complained about forever. Like, you just don't see it. You see it when it's new, and then you're like, okay. And then you use your phone.
I still get notch comments. Still get notch comments.
Well, I'm sorry. Outside of Reddit. You know.
I say, Apple and MacRumors, like, our forums and our comment section is very much Reddit. Just all of the Apple users. And I love them all to death, but sometimes we just got to let some things go. And you're right. The Crease is not something that you notice after your first like hour of using it.
The Crease is a problem for people who are standing next to you, looking at you use your phone, because they can see the Crease because that's how light works. When you are looking at your phone head on, even a first generation Galaxy Fold, like you, that Crease is not an issue. So I look forward to the internet discourse is never going to die down. Yeah. People are going to be talking about the Crease forever. You're right. Just like they still talk about the notch or whatever. Mm-hmm. But for actual users, for real people who are going to spend real money on these things, like it's not going
to
be a problem.
Only reason why I'm let down is because if they don't get it to be completely like you know, in their world, completely creaseless. You can't see it at all, which I still don't think that's going to happen. I think it's going to be really good, maybe best in class at the time. But like, it's just like, then why did this take so long? You could have just released something slightly worse and we could have just been on generation 3 or 4 now where it's better with the crease and like you can hype it up a little bit. Hartley, you're looking at, I want to hear your thoughts. Go ahead, jump right in.
I just think that there's a pretty straightforward answer to that, which is that I think pretty much prior to, I would say maybe last year, there were still too many compromises in the foldable category. Whereas now, I think over the last 18 months or so, I think the category has got to a stage now where there are still compromises, but it's kind of at an acceptable level where the average Apple customer is going to be willing to put up with that. But what I am interested actually in getting some thoughts on is, okay, the crease is one thing that maybe Apple can do better than its rivals, maybe not. And obviously, ecosystem is a huge advantage. But where are the other areas where Apple can really be distinctive and actually outshine these competitors and not just provide just another foldable, but it just happens to run iOS?
I have two immediate thoughts that jump to mind. The first is service and repair. Nobody has Apple's footprint in terms of being able to take care of customers. Like, you know, you break your iPhone, you walk into an Apple store. There's an Apple store in every major city. That's much more difficult to do with Samsung or Motorola. Two, and this is where my stupid influencer side comes out, like video camera quality. It doesn't matter how good the still cameras are on any of these foldables. The video always suffers, in my opinion, on every Android phone compared to the iPhone. So even if Apple has to fit a slightly compromised camera into the iPhone Fold, it will still, barring some crazy upset that I can't foresee, it will still launch with a foldable with the best video camera on any foldable. And that's massive.
I think we should actually talk about the cameras a little bit, because I think cameras are one of those areas of compromise in general for foldables. Mm-hmm. And iPhone users in particular, especially pro iPhone users, people that are willing to spend ultimately really a lot of money pretty much every year for a flagship device to get the absolute best pictures. I mean, Dan and I have talked about this a lot, that we're not sure how many people are going to be convinced to move to a device that probably won't have a telephoto and may have other camera compromises. What do you think about that?
Yeah. I think it won't matter. It won't impact the sales to a significant degree. I think because of what I just said about video, but also, you know, stills, you can take an iPhone 17e out there and get wonderful results. You know, same with the Air. And yet I that's the one area that I'm still frustrated with the category of as a whole. Because you're being forced to pay so much money for any foldable, for any large format foldable. And then you are always 100% of the time saddled with a camera compromise. And that duality has never set right with me, or I think most people who want to buy these things. And it's a little odd that Apple seems not to have been able to sort of come out the gate but we fixed it. And I'm sure we'll see that on stage with the, you know, when they announce it and it's like, no, we did very special things. No, it's actually 8 cameras in one, just on one of the lenses and whatever. It's an oversight that I have to believe is driven by a business belief that the people who buy a foldable are willing to put up with that camera compromise, even though they're paying a lot more for a reduced capability camera stack. That's not me. That's not a lot of people I know, but I mean, everyone's got to be doing it for a reason, right?
I mean, the thing that kind of pisses me off about this is that, like, there are other foldables that have 3-4 cameras out there. They might not be as good. And if we're already getting a lesser quality version of the main sensor potentially, or the ultra wide sensor, how could you not figure out a way to put in a third one and satisfy everyone? Because if I'm going to be paying more than the Pro by a lot, I would, and you're calling it the Ultra, which again, we don't know for sure, but that's where a lot of the rumors seem to be going. If you're going to, you know, put this as the cream of the crop phone, that's how people are going to look at it. Highest, most expensive, Ultra in Apple's world seems better than Pro in all the other ways. So why are we not getting the best of the best? And even if it's not the best camera quality, well, we at least have three cameras. You know, they don't even have to touch on the quality. Reviewers will do that. But like, they could just say, here's our triple lens camera system that we modified and re-engineered to fit the foldable landscape so that blah, 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 blah. But at least you got three cameras where Samsung only has two. Granted, they do have the Ultra, which has three. Or is it four? I forget.
Three.
Yeah, three. Yeah. And then they have the... So, you I mean...
twin selfies, yeah.
Yeah, that's the one. But like, you know... They could do this, and they're not going to, and they'll probably save it for the next generation, but it's just frustrating.
I feel like it's a positioning thing. I think we're trying to interpret like phone offerings from manufacturers in a vertical fashion like we always have. You know, mm-hmm. It's like you got a bunch of slabs, and then at the bottom, you've got your really poorly spec'd ones that are entry level, and then you've got the premium ones at the top with the big cameras and everything. And then we instinctively want to put foldables at the very top of that linear conception. Because, of course, they're the most expensive and in some ways the most capable. But I think the reality is they've always been this weird offshoot. They've always been in a weird column off to the side. And the biggest companies have been able to offer several foldables. So you've got a flip and a fold, and then that's its own sort of thing. But, you know, every manufacturer, I ask everyone, and they say the same thing. New York City, sorry. Yeah. every manufacturer says the same thing. They say, we don't have enough space in a foldable because of all the other compromises we have to make to accommodate the hinge and the thermal dissipation that is always difficult on a foldable. We have to find some place to fit a battery that we've now had to split in half. There's another whole screen in there. There's another whole selfie module in there. And it's, you know, to your point, yes, Dan, the Samsung has three cameras, but that telephoto is a 3x lens backed up by a 10 megapixel camera. Then you've got Motorola who ships a better one, but then they use more space. It's a bigger, heavier thing. So it's always a matter of compromise, right?
But that's the thing. I'm okay with bigger and heavier. I don't know how you guys feel, but like, I'm okay with it if it means we're getting better stuff.
I was with you, and then Samsung did Fold 7 and then Fold 8 Ultra, and I use it for a week to review it, and then I moved to something like the Pixel, which is not a tank. It's not that bad, right? You're looking at the thing, you're like, how much? And it feels like I invested in a gold brick. Yeah. And I carry it around. It's just such a monster. So I think thin and light matters in foldables more than anywhere else, honestly.
Maybe it's just because I hold my phone in my hands at all times and never put it in my pocket that I'm like, whatever, it's all just all feels the same to me. But like, yeah. Harley, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, I agree that foldables have existed in this kind of weird third space. But I think that's maybe where it presents a problem for Apple, because from the very first iPhone, as the product line has expanded, Apple has taught us that this is a vertical product category. And it has taught consumers that it is a vertical category with a very clear progression of gaining features as you spend more money. And actually, the one time it's tried to not do that was the iPhone Air and present this kind of weird outlier with certain feature compromises, but it's more fashion focused with the nice polished titanium frame. And that has not sold well. And the problem is that this foldable is primarily designed to appeal to Apple ecosystem users that have been really heavily indoctrinated to believe in that. And if they do call it an Ultra as well, we've come to believe that an Ultra is the best device.
Yeah,
so
right.
I do think this presents a problem, and there are other compromises here that we should get into. One of those being Touch ID, that this device will not have Face ID, which again is an example of Apple's told us that Face ID is better than Touch ID for years. It's refined this. It's spread across to the iPad Pro. People are craving it on the Mac, and now actually know, you know, Touch ID is the ultra solution after all.
Michael, I'd be curious to know if you're like me and absolutely hate the integrated, I almost dropped, we don't usually swear on here, but like sometimes, you know, every once in a while lets it rip and I almost did. And like, I just absolutely hate those damn buttons with the touch. It always just feels off to me, and maybe just because I'm just not used to it all the time, but I don't know.
That could be. Yeah, no, I think maybe I am the opposite. I wonder if it's a byproduct of growing up with, you know, fingerprint sensors were well represented in science fiction when I was coming up. And I feel like it's always represented cool futuristic to me. And when I think it was the 4S or the 4, which iPhone was it that launched the Touch ID in the home? It was 5S.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was so, oh God, I geeked out about all that. It's like, we got a stainless steel ring that detects when your thumb is, I'm like, yes, give me more of that. And I never got onto the Face ID thing. I think it's really cool tech. I think it's very seamless. Obviously a lot of people love it. Just personally, I have always appreciated fingerprint sensors more on a mobile device. Not so much on a laptop.
See, but hold on. Sorry to interrupt. Real quick. Please. I absolutely loved Touch ID on a home button. And I also really liked fingerprint sensors on the back or when it's integrated in the screen in the middle. Mm-hmm. I just don't like them on the side.
On the side.
Even though that's where your thumb naturally goes, I just feel like it doesn't work as well. Even with the iPad having it on the power button, I don't really love that either.
No, that's awkward. I agree with you. Yeah, that's odd. Actually, I like it when manufacturers hide them in the display. You know, you just rest your thumb on the screen and there's
perfectly a fingerprint
sensor underneath.
Yes,
I agree. The edge positioning is awkward. I don't think it's going to be a deal breaker, but I think it is going to be one of those friction points that, you know, mm-hmm. when iPhone Ultra 2 comes, we put Face ID in there because we heard you on that side button. But, you know, I don't think it's going to halt sales. But it is, you're right. It's one of those, hardly one of those compromises that that you sort of have to settle for. Doorbell. Love
this. Wait. Is this an unreleased phone coming in? What's coming in? Are we getting?
Probably. I don't know. It's not worth getting up for if it is. I mean, I have
you
all
can
the phone.
If you need to.
No, I'm three phones behind as it is. I don't want that. I'm going to mute. You guys talk.
Okay. Well, I mean, honestly, do you remember, Hartley? I don't know if you were actually even my first day that I started was iPhone 10, and that's when we like got out of the whole realm of Touch ID and got into Face ID. And I was getting killed in the comments for how much I did not like Face ID. And,
I mean,
like,
it's got a lot Touch ID. We forget now. How limited Face ID was in its first implementation. And now
it's
I mean, it was the same with Touch ID, really. I mean, Touch ID in its first implementation was pretty slow as well. And that's just what happens with authentication systems as they develop over time. But I think that it is a problem for the iPhone Ultra. And I think there are a few of these issues. And one of these problems undoubtedly, which I don't think is actually unique to Apple, but I think people will say that it's unique to Apple, even though it very much isn't, is price. People will say that it's unique to Apple because there will be people that haven't really thought about a foldable before that will go into an Apple store and see a foldable for the first time and will see a price tag of, I don't know, maybe $2,200 or something like that. And that is going to be a lot to stomach. So as someone that uses these devices frequently, and there are these are expensive devices, Michael, what do you think about how much that really matters?
I think one of the reasons I became foldable pilled so long ago is because I bought the first Galaxy Fold at, you know, $2,000 or whatever it was for a really stupid reason. I was going to a New Year's Eve party and a friend of mine had it, and I decided I just couldn't be upstaged. But I was really excited about it by the category. So, I went to Best Buy, I got it. And then almost immediately afterwards, I got sick enough to be in a hospital for a week, which sucked. Ooh. And it was a mystery ailment in February 2020, and they didn't know what it was. Crazy.
Oh, weird.
Yeah.
Did they ever figure that out?
I don't think so. So, but I had my Fold with me. It was one of the only things I was able to take to the hospital with me. And the utility of the category cemented itself in my brain in that week, because I didn't need or miss my Kindle or my iPad, and I had my phone. It was all one device. It was like a new convergence moment, and I think that immediately justified the cost to me. Periodically now, I will still, even though we all get review devices of the foldables now, and almost nobody asks for them back, so they all end up just laying around all of my various spaces. I will still buy a device so I do not lose the skin in the game feeling of like, oh my God, I just spent like that price tag has a comma in it and it's like closer to the two than the one. I have yet to regret spending that amount of money because of the utility returned to me in the form of this new convergence moment. And then, of course, the response to that is, well, look, let's add up a mid-tier iPhone and a Kindle and an iPad, and you can buy all three of those and still not pay as much as the iPhone Ultra might cost. But you do lose the utility of having it all in your pocket and not having to worry about any of those other devices. You already have everything you need. So I think that if Apple is able to sell that story, then the product will be a success. Given its expertise at marketing, I have no doubt that it will be able to tell that story well.
And there are so many marketing questions around this device, because I think that I personally think they're going to actually be quite reluctant to compare it to an iPad. I don't think Apple always wants you to buy more right. devices, not less. And maybe the exception was the original iPhone, pretty much just saying it would replace the iPod. But other than that, I think Apple wants you to have a collection of different devices. And it's going to be interesting to see how they get around some of these compromises. But one place where they do have an opportunity to market this device uniquely is with the foldable specific software features. And so many different manufacturers have got different solutions for this. I mean, Samsung have pretty much stripped a lot of them away with this new hinge that no longer enables you to set it in kind of halfway positions.
Flex mode.
That's been controversial. So I wonder what you think Apple could do with software in terms of multitasking, maybe camera features, I don't know, that really would be marketable and really would help to sell this as, this is why it's an iPhone Ultra. This is what you're paying for.
Yeah, I think Apple has a key advantage there that no Android manufacturer does, and it really is the app ecosystem, and it is more so the developer's willingness to invest in apps that will scale elegantly, because this has been Android's big albatross around its neck in the foldable space. Is like a lot of the apps don't scale elegantly to the larger display because developers aren't convinced, and I think rightly so, are not convinced that they're going to get a return on that investment, because the Google Play Store is not as lucrative as the Apple App Store is, I think, by a large margin. So I think Apple already has, like, there's going to be a lot of excitement around this device. And I think there are going to be more developers than not who are willing to say, like, all right, this is probably going to be worth our time to build a version that works well on the foldable. I think that alone will go so far to creating a sense of that this is the superior option compared to Android phones. And on top of that, iPhone users already don't, by and large, need that reinforcement. They already believe that. And in many cases, it's true for iPhone users, right? So, I don't know that Apple needs to come out the gate with five obvious improvements versus its Android competition, because they're already built right into that consideration,
I think Samsung and Apple did each other's huge favors, by the way. Like, Samsung beat them to the punch, basically, in releasing this form factor and pretty much piggybacked off of everyone, us included, saying, like, well, this is what the iPhone's going to be like, and this is such a great form factor, and we love it. And they sold a record amount of pre-orders. And then now everyone's like, I've got just casual people being like, I heard that new Samsung phone is, like, really good, but Apple's making one that's very, like, very much the same. I'm really excited. Is that true? And I'm like, yeah. So, like, now you've got just all sorts of people invested in this. And so if Samsung's able to have a lot of pre-orders, more so than they were expecting, I mean, I once on this podcast, and I have the right to say I was wrong or change my opinion, I said this device would fail based on the price tag and the current rumors and how I positioned it with the whole Ultra thing. But is it really Ultra? Okay, I think I'm wrong. And if everyone's buying this Samsung one, or if a lot of more people are buying this one, then Apple, we've talked about their marketing team. They're going to have a field day. They're going to eat it up. I think they're going to sell a ton now. So I'm wrong, but I think I'm wrong. We obviously don't know yet. But by the way, I still have people commenting saying there's no way Apple's making a foldable. This guy's lying all the time. And I am now bookmarking those, and I am coming for you guys in a few weeks. So just... And if I am wrong, if they don't release one, well, I might quit. I don't know. We'll see.
Always on the lookout for that ejection handle, right?
I might just have to bail. I don't know.
But once a week, I say, like, I got to get off this YouTube treadmill. I'm going to go open up a gas station or something. I just need to not, never do this again.
Need to not look at the comments every once in a while.
Yep.
Okay, so I mean, is there anything you think that Apple just needs to make sure they get right, looking at what all these other companies have done, that you're like, they absolutely cannot come out of the gate with this issue?
Yeah, I hate this. It's annoying. Apple has proven so annoyingly competent that it's difficult to foresee the company doing a rake step on this. Like, we look at Vision Pro, I think we all agree that probably that product did not perform I don't know. Maybe tell me if you disagree. I don't think the Vision Pro performed to the standards that.
Oh, we shouldn't talk about the Vision Pro on this channel. Okay.
Got it.
I mean, listen, I'll just give you a quick synopsis. Hartley and I both agree that it's an incredible product, and it's also probably one of the worst performing products that Apple has had in quite some time. And it's a shame because it's really good.
It is. Yeah. It is a shame. I agree. Mine is down here, ready for me to want to use it again.
And not use it?
And end up. Yeah. But, you know, I think the reason I bring that up is because that's where my brain goes when it's like, all right, what has Apple recently sort of failed at for product-wise? You know, failed. And I think the reality of the phone world is so different. And this category as a whole has been waiting to be validated by the largest player in the US finally joining the fray for so long. Like, I don't see a way they could screw it up unless they had a first generation Galaxy Fold moment. So to answer your question, like, the display, they cannot have spontaneous failures.
Yeah. Like a piece of sand getting in between the hinge where the first one, where that just completely ruined it.
And I'm glad you said that exact example, Dan, because like that just happened to my Fold 7. I love
still
the Fold
going
7.
On.
Yes, because Samsung, now I will give credit to another manufacturer here in a second, but Samsung has never added proper dust resistance to its foldables. That is not to say it hasn't improved stuff. They've done crazy stuff like put brooms in the hinge, like there are these brushes in the company. You know, like they've done all kinds of things to prevent a recurrence of that first Galaxy Fold wave of failures, and they've succeeded largely, and it's great. But their IP rating, the international protection rating that says dust is not allowed in here, water is not allowed in here, it's always had an X for that dust figure, or it's had a 4, which is, I think, it can't, like, 4 is like the size of ants. It can't let bugs into it. You know, it's not a dust-proof rating. So even as other manufacturers have. So, yeah, my Fold 7 got a grain of sand in it at the beach, and it's still in there. The phone works, but the display has this little pimple on the hinge that I can't get rid of now because there's a grain of sand physically in it. Now, on the flip side of that, though, you have manufacturers like Honor. I don't know if you guys spend a lot of time reading Android Central, LOL. But I say that because of the Mac side, not because I mean I love AC, and one of the reasons I love AC is because Nick Sutrick, did that insane durability test with the Honor Magic V6, I think. I mean, you saw this. He dumped it in a mud bath, and got it so impregnated with sand that when he opened and closed it, it grinded like a thing, and then he threw it in his dishwasher to test its IP69X rating or whatever it is, and 69K. And the thing is great. A full-scale foldable works perfectly after being abused beyond belief. So I think if Apple can deliver that kind of reliability, which I have every confidence it can, given its track record, that'll be what people finally need to see to trust the category and to go on buying a bunch of iPhone Ultras. Because it's one thing if an Honor phone does it that no one cares about. Just look at my SEO results anytime I post anything about an Honor phone. Americans do not care.
Well, I was going to say, so we often talk about, like, we compare Samsung and Google. I'm only just doing that from a US perspective. Obviously, we all know that there are other companies that have already beaten Samsung and Apple to this punch. I'm looking at you, Huawei, with your, I don't remember the name of it, but the one that I actually think is the better form factor because it's not so like pointy and square. It's the same size, but like it's rounded off more. You would know this. and like, I liked that feeling better. And I think that's where Apple might be going, where it's more like rounded at the corners, you know, to fit their crazy border radius thing that they've got going on in their lives. but like, by the way, shout out Androids. I do, as an Apple person, I still watch. I don't read as much, but watch all of those channels. Fandroid, that's my boy, Nick.
Heck
Cleveland guy, so I got to support. So go check it out if you want to know more about these foldables. But like, yeah, you're absolutely right. We cannot be having that in 2026. We cannot be having that from Apple. I know that the other companies probably also have very high standards, but Apple, as all of that, like, just cannot have that Gen 1 type issue that was a problem 7 years ago. So Hartley, would love to know your thoughts as well.
I agree, but it still is a Gen 1 product, and there are still a lot of compromises in the foldable space. And I think that that is a key part of this device's story, because I don't think that Apple actually needs this to be a complete runaway success. In fact, I think in some ways it's hoping that it isn't, given that this is going to be in pretty short supply. And so the story of this device will probably be quite good for them, that they will be flying off shelves. There'll be 8-week delivery wait for the first 3 or 4 months this thing is available. There may even be a delay getting this thing out of the door for launch in the first place. That is all very good for how this device is perceived. I think where it gets more interesting is with the second gen, because by then we should have fixed a lot of these supply chain problems. And it won't be so easy to perhaps, I don't want to say disguise, because it makes it sound like that's a purposeful thing on Apple's behalf, but it won't be so easy to, it won't be quite so opaque how this device is really performing and how consumers really feel about it. It's inevitable that there are going to be issues with a first generation device. I don't necessarily mean in terms of durability, but just in terms of a pitch to users. I mean, the iPhone Air is to me the key example of that. They are coming back with a second gen model that fixes all of these problems in the first gen, like gives it a second camera and improves the battery life. The foldable will inherit many comparable problems to the iPhone Air at a much higher price. So to me, it's that second gen model that really is going to reveal really how successful Apple's take on the foldable is. But I don't know what you guys make of that.
I mean, I agree. I think we're going to be looking back next year when we have Michael. Hopefully we have you on again, not like a once a year thing. I'd like multiple times. I know we're all very busy though. But when we inevitably do this again next year and we're like, all right, well, how are your thoughts on the iPhone Ultra and what are you looking forward to on the sec? It's going to all be like, you know, well, this is rumored and it's going to fix all these pain points, thankfully. And it's like, well, how didn't we see this last year? But right. I think, and because we're kind of up against time, I just want to say, I think the last thing that Apple just really needs to nail, and we kind of hinted at this before, was software. And I am grateful to have seen that, you know, at WWDC, we were already seeing about how apps can dynamically adjust sizes based on, and they've limited that for more like the iPad, but we're like, we know what you're doing here. We know what you're there's very conveniently the exact shape and size of what we're expecting. Like, we see what you're doing. But are there any things in the software that you're like, Apple needs to come out with this out of the gate so it doesn't have these issues? And like, you know, we talked about iPhone Air hardware issues, but what about software? I mean, iPhone Air, that didn't have software issues because it's the same. But, you know, with this, obviously, there's going to be some differences and some features. So what are you just kind of hoping to see there?
Yeah, there are. I'll circle back to something that Hartley, you mentioned, was removed from Fold 8, which is the sort of flex mode here. The, you know, the thing where you can't position the hinge and have it remain in place. Samsung seems to have decided to gate that. You know, it's not on the Fold 8, but it is on the Fold 8 Ultra. So maybe it's, you know, maybe that was a business decision. Like, we have to give people reason to spend an extra $200 or whatever. So flex mode is on this. It's not on that. I think I would be disappointed if Apple didn't launch with some form of that posture, with a hinge that allows enough friction to retain its position. Because, again, this is less of an issue than it has been, but for the people who watch a lot of videos on their phones, the key advantage to a foldable has never been that the inner display gives more display acreage, in my opinion, because often it doesn't. As we've seen many times before, the key advantage is the phone is its own kickstand. Like, you put it down, you have controls on the bottom, you have video on top. And Android has a bunch of apps that are optimized for that on a foldable. You bend the phone half and half, you bend the phone in half, the top area becomes for display, the bottom area comes for control. And I think if Apple doesn't do that, that would be a significant oversight or a significant disappointment on my part, because I do use those modes often. You know, we're always on the road. You're always, sometimes you have an airplane seat back tray table that is too small, or the guy leans the seat back and that's annoying and your laptop doesn't fit. And foldables really shine in those environments. So yeah, I think that would be the key thing for me, whatever they end up calling their flex mode. You know, I'm sure it'll have a more elegant name than that.
I mean, it should have anything? That kind of feature. That is something that has sort of been leaked. So as part of iOS 27 beta code, there are strings that refer to not only the fold state, but also to the hinge angle. So that code be in there if it wasn't to hint at this kind of feature? But I mean, there's so much potential with multitasking. I mean, look at how on the iPad, Apple has gone through all these different iterations of multitasking. And really, the foldable is the perfect platform to show something really quite special. And even just with the cover display, I'll be a little bit underwhelmed if we just get just a normal iPhone on that cover display. We don't get any kind of, you know, unique widgets or experiences that are specific to that. I think one place where that is possible is with the new dynamic island that's really more of a punch hole, because that's going to be dramatically smaller. So the last thing I would touch on is, one thing I noted in your video, Michael, was frustration about the placement of that punch hole. And yes. Apple also is going to a punch hole here, so that's a like for like. But one of the differences may be the placement. So it looks like Apple will have it off center and will have it on the right side of the device. So could you maybe explain, for Apple users at least, why this matters? Because I think a lot of Apple users are going to be triggered by the fact that that's not in the center, that it's not perfectly symmetrical. So why would that maybe be a good thing?
Yes, the selfie camera, that was a somewhat Samsung-specific complaint because, you know, you have this beautiful display and then you punch a hole in it. And Samsung, for several generations, had self-hiding selfie cameras. They built the display over the top of it and activated those pixels, only deactivated those pixels when you were using that camera, which was a very cool trick that they abandoned. So I think I was mostly
kind of sad that they...
Very frustrating. Yeah. But then, you know, so okay, we got over it because you get better camera quality as a result. But by being one of the only manufacturers that doesn't hide that selfie camera in the corner, Samsung opened itself up to this situation where you're reading a book or you're running a game that puts its scores up there in that top line. And the camera is literally a hole in the display and the app doesn't know to accommodate for it. So it very quickly became one of those annoyances that doesn't make you regret using the thing, but it's a little bit of friction that shouldn't necessarily be there. So I think even if it is aesthetically perhaps a compromise to hide it away in the corner where you can see that the corner radii don't quite line up and that, you know, it tickles your strange compulsions if you're me, then you must remember that it's off there in the corner because it's trying not to get in the way of the rest of your content. And I really hope that is the case, because if it's in the spot where it is in the Fold 8, I think that's one of the few kind of real irritations that, again, you get over, but it's, you know.
Yeah, it's one of those things like you'll get over it, but, you know, you don't have to when you can just put it in the correct spot to begin with.
Right, right. And you can also tell apps, by the way, to omit that entire top bar. You can kind of limit an app by whatever that is, 30 pixels or something like that. But again, you're working around a hardware issue that no one else seems to have.
Yeah. One last thing. I got two questions. I'll just kind of lump them into one. But I do have, actually, I might have a couple. This might be a stupid question for you, but are you still carrying two phones on a regular basis?
Oh, God. No, those are like vacation days. I'm usually carrying five at this point.
Okay, so, but is there one that you would call your daily driver that you put like your main number in?
Yeah, well, I have Google Voice as my main number, so there is such thing, right?
So there's no such thing. Well, look at you.
No, but my carrier SIM, my personal SIM that I pay for, like it's usually in the Motorola Razr Ultra.
Okay. Yeah. There's a reason behind this. Sure. So in this first year, do you think this phone is going to be a hit or is it not? In Apple's sense, I guess, not necessarily like in the foldables. Well, I guess you can answer both. Do you think it's going to be the best foldable but still not be a hit in Apple's eyes or vice versa? And then would you daily drive this, aka you're taking that personal SIM out and you're putting it, and this is your like, I use 6,000 phones, but like I ultimately come back to this one. It's hard to answer that last one when you don't have it, but like just if all the rumors and everything.
You know, it's not that hard actually. So the first one, yeah, it's going to be my prediction is it's going to be an unqualified success.
Okay.
Absolutely. But will I carry it as my personal? No.
Because you're not an iOS guy, are you?
I'm not really an iOS guy. I am a Mac OS guy. I appreciate Apple. I certainly respect Apple, and I enjoy covering Apple's products. I just, from a mobile perspective, I think, you know, when I get to be my age, you know, I think your flexibility sort of erodes, and I was never that flexible to begin with. So like I have become used to what Android offers me. I know how it behaves. I like a lot of its features. We could talk about that on a whole other episode. And I'm just used to it. Mm-hmm. And I tend to like it better from a personal perspective when I'm deciding what I want to use day to day. And often that, you know, that's going to, I guarantee you, again, this foldable iPhone will have the best video camera ever. It is so dumb that I probably won't carry it as my daily because I need that video camera so often. And I carry an iPhone specifically for it. There's my 17 Pro that I cannot leave the house without because it's much more portable.
Wait a minute. Go ahead and tell us what's on that. Go ahead.
Oh, I didn't do that on purpose. I'm sorry.
No, but I want you to. I want you to. I didn't forget.
This podcast is sponsored by Clicks. No, I'm kidding. This is the Clicks creator keyboard. Disclosure, I'm a co-founder. But anyway, I will probably not end up carrying it. And by the way, I look forward to maybe being wrong about that. Wouldn't that be wild if I was like, guys,
if you're like, I'm going to take this. Well, cause like, you know, half your complaint, like you like foldables, Apple didn't make one. Now they're making one. So that's your 50% of the way there to getting you as their guy. Now it's just like, what do they need to do in iOS to make it happen?
But to Hartley's earlier point, I think Gen 2 is going to be the one and we saw that happen. Actually, that wouldn't be the first time in foldables. The second generation of the Motorola Razr was eons ahead of the first one. Galaxy Fold 2 is still one of the best foldables Samsung has ever made. And it was like it was from the future compared to the first one. So I think there's something in that development process of bringing these things to life that makes that second generation just powerfully better. So I agree with you, Hartley. I think 2027 iPhone Ultra will be something.
I one last, you don't have to go too much into this, but one last question. Aren't you just surprised that if Apple was to do a foldable, I always thought if Apple was going to do a foldable, it wasn't going to do the book style fold. It was going to do the clamshell from a fashion perspective. I'm still shocked that that's not the first one that it goes with.
I'm shocked and a little disappointed as a, you know.
Because you like that one better.
I like it for a specific use case better. You know, I like it so that you can see yourself when you're framing up a shot. And speaking of flex mode, like you can do this and do and make it its own tripod and do a live stream or other insufferable influencer crap. And like the flip form factor is so useful for that. And if you made it that with an iPhone camera, I think it would be.
It'd be huge.
It would be so massive. So yeah, it's a bit of a surprise.
Probably going to happen, but just don't know when on that regards. You know, we've often talked about the iPhone Air being like that stepping point. Like it's at some point that Air is going to go from this to this and it's going to close. But who knows when that's going to happen. But honestly, man, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Please just give a quick plug for where they can find you. And also, I know you don't want to talk about Clicks, but I cannot wait to get my hands on the communicator. You just, if you want to briefly touch on it, you can, by all means. Not sponsored, but it's cool stuff.
It is cool stuff. Thank you so much. I exist on YouTube at Mr. Mobile or the Mr. Mobile on YouTube, where I cover mobile technology, mostly foldables these days, which is weird. But yes, I am also a co-founder of Clicks, and we make, my microphone cable, I almost ripped out because it's very sensitive. Where yes, we make the keyboard for several phones as well as the power keyboard, the sort of universal version. And coming soon, the Clicks communicator. So it's clicks.tech if you want to check that out. We're pretty excited about a lot of this stuff. We're all a bunch of, it kind of does us a disservice to call us a bunch of BlackBerry nerds, but I think that's indisputably true. And it's nice too.
BlackBerry was so cool back then. So honestly, it's fine.
Yeah. And I've never stopped missing physical keyboards. So it's nice to play a small part in bringing them back.
Yep. Thank you so much for joining us, man. And for everybody else, we'll catch you in next week's episode.
Thank you, guys.